It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running again on the 15th day of November 2018. It's a little bit more than a minute past the hour. We are at the halfway mark of November. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we are to easily be found. That, in fact, is where you can go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. A nice group gathering already. If you pick yourself out a screen name and a password at the chat room link at HeadOn.live, well, by Jove, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Laurel and Malin and Kim and Otto and the Urban Prospector and VT Blom and the Warrior Witch. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, can't do a damn thing about air quality in Northern California and has not folded space because it's really not a good idea to be outside right now because California is on fire, and thus Sparky has remained Sparky inside the confines of the Spacing Guild headquarters. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm in the chat room too. And it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And before we get going in full, we've got thanks to send out. Thanks to Robert in California. Thanks very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut. And thank you very kindly to Timothy. Thank you, all three of you, for your subscriptions. You know, our subscribers knock out about a quarter of the fundraising goal every month here. And we would welcome one of these days being able to have the subscribers knock out the entirety of fundraising here for The Horn, so that I'm not constantly talking about updates to fundraising. Because, well, we're... Wait a minute. What? Lassie? Lassie? Oh, that's a good girl. Lassie, go tell the sheriff that the horn's down the well again. Yeah, just fell right... The ground just opened up and fell right out from under us. No, Lassie. No, I don't want to throw the tennis ball for you. We're down in a well. Lassie. Oh, well, darn. At any rate, we've made some progress during the course of the week in fundraising, but we are at minus $580 this evening. And that means tomorrow, Friday on the front porch, would be minus $780, and that's almost out of a week long fundraising goal. That's the majority of. We badly need to knock some of that out, at least a day or so, or 2 days worth of fundraising, so that it's not so harrowing tomorrow. You know, 58 people at $10 a piece, and there's lots more than 58 people listening. Or 10 people at $58 a piece, or, oh God, with the ciphering, 2 people at $290 a piece. 4 people at $145 a piece. and so on. 7250 for eight people. Oh, dear God. 36 and a quarter for 16 people. And that's really as far as I can go. If, on the other hand, you'd like to be a part of the subscription team, just run over to headon.live, click on PayPal, and when you put in, like, 10.00, just check that box that says make this a recurring monthly event or whatever it says. And then, you know, you'll be out every bit of a 30th or so of the price of a cup of corporate coffee for every hour of liberal, independent, progressive broadcasting that you support. Thank you, John. Thank you, John, for getting us started. That takes us down to 565. Thank you, John, very, very much. It is a beginning, and hopefully you'll get lots of company. As I said, it is it's thorn in the side Thursday, and oh Jesus, it is a sticker bush. That's what we call them around here, sticker bush. It's a sticker bush of thorns. Let me say before we go any further, you know, at the end of the evening last night, our dear friend Kitty up in Boston had said that she was having some outpatient surgery done today. And I asked her to update me after it was all over, and she was all okay. And she said, my surgery went well, and I'm resting comfortably at home. I feel great, hardly any pain at all. And I'm glad it's over. Thanks for the shout-out. And thanks to everybody who kept Kitty in their thoughts. And I know that's almost the entirety, if not the entirety, of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Thank you. Thank you again. So, thorn in the side Thursday. Well, okay. We reserve these days for the kind of right-wing nuttery that just, you know, right in the gallbladder. And yeah. And this is no different from most any Thursday. Dear God. I mean, yesterday was wild enough, and now that we know that Donald Trump thinks people are putting on big noses and glasses and going to vote twice, Whoopi Goldberg did a magnificent job sending him up. She put on her costume from Ghost to show how she puts on a disguise to go and vote repeatedly. Jesus, this man. But from a thorn in the side Thursday kind of perspective, just one little observation. I saw a headline earlier. Indictments are coming. Ex-prosecutors say Trump's Twitter tirade is a sign Mueller is making a major move. Well, we've been hearing a lot of that lately. And I'm not trying to diminish the gravity of another round of indictments coming from Robert Mueller. That is not my intent in the least. But I just wanted to step back for a moment with regard to the sort of if-then causality involved with that headline. Because Julius Geezer got up this morning, and his tiny little thumbs were running like a hurricane across the keyboard of his phone. And a lot of it was sleazy crap directed toward Robert Mueller, whom he bitterly complained never was Senate confirmed. He wasn't required to be confirmed by the Senate, but you know, never mind. But this idea that somehow or another his behavior is an indication of some thing coming in the real world. Now, this is not to say that the assertion in that headline may not be correct, but I really do think we have got to reach a place where we sort of understand that this man does not operate within the, I use the word man loosely, does not operate within the realm of the real world with which you and I contend upon a daily basis. He may have started that Twitter storm because his bowels didn't move properly this morning, or because he wasn't satisfied with his really weird hairdo that consists of multiple twistings of a single hair that's about 500 feet long. Do you see what I'm saying? I've thought more and more about an idea I put forward yesterday. We've all assumed that it was the rain or a secret meeting with his boyfriend Vlad that kept him from going to the Ain Marne Cemetery in France to mark the armistice, the centennial of the armistice. And more I find myself simply asking, what if he's just so crazy that they can't let him out in public? What if he's so far gone that after, say, a lengthy transatlantic flight and the jet lag that accompanies it, what if he was just past the ability of medical science to dose him sufficiently to make him seem as if he has any working relationship with reality? Is there any evidence to the contrary out there? I mean, they managed to prop him up long enough for a friendly interview with the Daily Caller, and look what we got out of that. Liberals disguising themselves to engage in multiple voting. An overt dog whistle call for his fascist bully boys to get out into the streets and start cracking skulls. What person whose brain is operating on a functional level vaguely resembling anything that medical science regards as normal would do things like that? And see, I'm way past this crazy like a fox, oh, he deliberately manipulates the yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. I really am convinced that for the most part, Donald J. Trump is non compos mentis. But nobody can say it. And he is insulated by the sycophants with whom he has surrounded himself from the ramifications of the 25th Amendment, plus the fact that Mike Pence has daddy issues and thinks and treats Trump like his daddy. Because Mike Pence still thinks that maybe come, 2024... he'll get to be president, too, because Jesus wants him to. I say this just on the front end of Thorn in the Side Thursday, because stories like this are kind of irresistible, and I think a whole lot of us are engaged in some serious desire for wish fulfillment. And that's not me being critical or in any way damning such desires. I got them too. But I'd just like us to make sure that we keep our understandings from being outpaced by our desires. Again, if that makes any sense. Nothing would thrill me more than to see Don Jr. Well, yes, it would thrill me more to see Donald Trump hauled off in chains, but Beavis or Butthead or Udi or Cootie or whatever, whichever one Don Jr. is, being hauled away in chains would do wonders for my holiday spirits. The thing is, though, Robert Mueller isn't leaking. He's just quietly going about his business in a workmanlike fashion. Even Ellie Honig, who used to be a federal prosecutor, suggested that, well, somebody's had a time to get real conversation with somebody implicated in the investigation, which was then relayed to Trump by defense attorneys. But Ellie Honig also acknowledged that this morning's Twitter freakout, quote, could be just another rant. Yeah, it could just be he was particularly worked up by whatever it was that was going on over there on Fox and Fiends. And there's really no way of knowing. But I've reached the point where, if there was any doubt before, I feel confident in asserting, from my own layman's point of view, that he is barking mad and very close to tearing off his clothing and playing with himself in public. I would love it if there was actually somebody out there listening to this program inside the White House going, "How does he know?" That would be funny. Well, I can sit here and complain about the 54 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studio, but apparently there's a snowstorm blowing in New York City that all my romantic associations with snow are long since gone. But in the realm of a Don Jr. indictment, Steve in New York says, "Talk about a Festivus miracle. Let the airing of the grievances commence." Well, I think Bob Mueller may be the king of Festivus in that case. Steve adding, "The only sophistication Trump is capable of is tiddlywinks or Connect Four. What, no Ganip Ganop?" Yeah, how many people out there of a certain age remember Ganip Ganop? Ping pong, spelled backwards. Yeah. Hey, thanks very kindly to Ralps. Ralps says, "I'm going to kick in $10. If it's met, I'll put in $10 more. Hugs." Thanks, Ralps. Hugs right back. So if somebody will jump in with $10, then Ralps will... Well, Ralps is kind of... not doubling, but tripling your $10. Thanks very kindly to Trevor. Trevor took us down to, let's see. 440, my favorite voltage. This will occasion some sort of comment from Master Electrician Sparky. But we're down at 440. Ralph's first 10 takes us down to 430. Somebody meets Ralph's 10, that's 420. And then Ralph's kicks in another 10, and it's 410. So we're making some progress. Hopefully. Other thorns there, and because lo, in my father's thicket are many sticker bushes. The facts surrounding the killing of Jamel Roberson in Chicago only get worse. We've discussed this at some length. Jamel Roberson was wearing a shirt that was emblazoned with the word security. He was qualified to carry a firearm. 26 years old. Security guard at Manny's Blue Room in the suburbs of Chicago. Well, the reason he was even working at Manny's Blue Room, it turns out, was because he was trying to save up some extra money. Because, and if you might want to, not the hockey puck, get the box of Kleenexes, tissues, I'm sorry. We've not been paid to say Kleenex here. Get the box of tissues. He was saving up money because it was his little boy's first Christmas coming up. His little boy's 9 months old, and he's got another child on the way. And he just wanted to make sure that for his first Christmas with his first child, that he had enough money to try to make it special. His significant other, Avante Boos, is expecting. And when she got the call about the fact that the police had gunned him down and Jamel Roberson down in cold blood, the Midlothian, Illinois Police Department, she just fell all apart in the bathroom. On the other hand, she said, their little boy, Tristan, 9 months old, doesn't understand. Avante Boos said he's just been calling for his dad and doesn't know where he is. Thank you, Midlothian Police Department. No thank you. God, how miserable. Horrifying. How tragic. And how not particularly bothersome to the National Ruble Association. Still waiting for charges to be filed against the cop who blew away the good guy with the gun. But please don't hold your breath while you're doing so, because you're likely to pass out. But things are not well over at the National Ruble Association. There are budget cuts taking place. And people inside the National Ruble Association, speaking to an outlet called The Trace, said that people working there are highly upset because the National Ruble Association has cut out free coffee in the office. From the piece at The Trace, perhaps the most vivid evidence of belt tightening at the NRA was its drastically reduced spending on the 2018 midterm elections. The group shelled out just under $10 million on House and Senate candidates this cycle, less than half of what it spent on congressional races in 2014 and 2016. One former National Ruble Association staffer says that the organization is, quote, draining money from general operations to push over to lobbying operations. They want the money to be able to push the agenda. They're also hemorrhaging money, which is significantly different from the way that their victims hemorrhage blood. They're hemorrhaging money because they decided to get into the insurance business with something they call CarryGuard. And the regulatory climate in the state of New York, where they were trying to hustle it, has cost the National Ruble Association millions and millions of dollars. All told, revenue from membership in the National Ruble Association dropped by something like $35 million over the last, say, 1 year. Somehow I'm having a hard time working up a sad for those awful human beings. When I think about a 9-month-old little fella who just wants to know where his daddy is. Oh, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, by the way. Oh, wait, let me check out something here. Michael and Madison jumped in. And met Ralph's challenge, as did Mark. Thank you, Mark, for the match. That takes us down to 410. Thank you very much indeed. No, 510. 510, sorry. Wishful thinking. But, yeah, 510, because we started at 580. Ciphering me, I'm sorry. But, yeah, 510. We're still working our way down to favorite voltages and favorite numbers and stuff like that. But, yes, we're down to 510. Clarence says, when the feds decide to pick up Don Jr., we can only hope that they take his father's advice and bang his head when they put him in the back seat of their squad car. The goddess of irony will gloat on that day. Yeah, don't be so nice to him. Don't be, you know, because of the way they'll like protect their heads from getting banged. Yeah, don't be so nice. Mm-hmm. And that's a good observation, Clarence. Thank you. Flavio points out, in regard to Trump, that's the subject line, you don't need to be sophisticated to be evil. I believe Donald Trump is an evil son of a bitch and does everything he does intentionally. There's a very dangerous fuck in the White House, and we thought Count Dicula was Satan. I don't know if it were any better if he was crazy. So, well, at least it would provide. Yeah, evil is hard to analyze, and I think it would be a little more convenient if we could say that, yeah, he's nuts. Oh, let's take a quick jaunt over to Virginia, Lynchburg, Virginia. That's the home of Jerry Falwell University, otherwise known as Liberty University. Sit, Liberty, sit. They've got a senior director of academic planning and operations there at Jerry Falwell University. By the name of Michael Hiskey. Now, he's a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. He's also cooling his heels in the stir. He was booked into the Blue Ridge Regional Jail back on November the 4th because he had been charged with, hold on, wait a minute. I'm going to try to have to square this up with the Gospels. Attempted murder, abduction, and kidnapping, as well as assault and battery on his traditional, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, biblical family values wife. In his LinkedIn profile, he said, I have a story. You have a story. Everybody has a story. Have you ever heard of Joe Schmo or Joe Nobody? There's no such thing. Everybody has a Joe Somebody, and everybody is a Joe Somebody. The organization, everybody's story deserves to be heard. And when you don't feel like there's someone there to listen, there is. Well, you know, confession is good for the soul. Maybe somebody will be there to listen when and if he decides to confess to, wait a minute, trying to abduct and murder his wife, not to mention having assaulted and battered her. It, by the way, he was also a business professor at Jerry Falwell University. Dear Jesus, save us from your followers. News broke right before airtime that a manual recount has been ordered in the Senate race in Florida. Nonetheless, Rick Skeletor Scott, who sat at the head of a company that perpetrated the single greatest Medicare fraud in the history of the United States, went up to Washington, D.C. for Senate school, where he had a picture taken of himself with the other incoming Republican noobs in the Oval Office with Julius Geiser. Are they in disguise? He asked. The guy looks a lot like Skeletor. He never said. But he may not yet get to be senator. And the hand recount has to be accomplished by Sunday. So that's going to be a little bit stressful. Wouldn't it be nice if Florida could just figure out how to do an election? Wouldn't it make elections a lot simpler if we didn't have to jump through all these hoops trying to make sure that certain people didn't vote? I know. Meanwhile, in the far frozen north, and it is frozen now, Ron writes, life in the frozen north, Ontario edition, is becoming impossible. Good Christians are up in arms because the provincial government just posted the new regulations for private pot shops, saying that they had to be 150 yards from the nearest school as opposed to the 20 miles one God-fearing Baptist deacon suggested. They aggravated this offensive behavior by also announcing that the LCBO, our equivalent of a state store, would now be open 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., 7 days a week. The horror. The horror. Mm-hmm. Wow. 7 days a week, huh? Yeah, we're still trying to get the imposition of Christianity out of West Virginia with a campaign to allow the sale of alcoholic spirits in bars and restaurants for Sunday brunch, and also letting state stores be open on, you know, Sunday. Jesus. 20 miles, huh? Yeah, we don't want those marijuana stores opened within 20 miles of a school. Of course, that would probably mean that the only marijuana stores would be, you know, up on the Arctic Circle or something. But
And then again, I have a feeling the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian Canadians knew that when they suggested it. I'd say 450 feet from a school is good enough. I mean, you should be able to see if you've got a string of students trying to get into the weed are us. And I imagine you can't get in under, what, 18, or is it 21, Ron? I don't know. Steve in New York, who has some contact in Ottawa, said, 8 inches of snow there tonight, my partner tells me. Thanks, climate change. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Had to run an errand earlier this evening. I was listening to a little bit of National Defense Contractor Radio, brought to you by Lockheed. And I heard a discussion with regard to the Paradise Fire. And officials there saying, look, we simply, the reporting was coming from an impromptu temporary refugee camp in a Walmart parking lot near Chico. And I heard one official say, look, even when things were okay, we had near zero openings for public housing in Butte County, California. And so what he was suggesting is that there are a lot of people who have been displaced from the Paradise, from the camp fire that resulted in the destruction of the Paradise area, who are going to have to move out of state because they can't absorb that many people who have been rendered homeless at the same time. And at the risk of being a little ray of sunshine, this goes back to a question that I have asked repeatedly, and we've never... And because it's not because nobody cares, but because it's a decidedly knotty, K-N-O-T-T-Y, not N-A-U-G-H-T-Y, question. Does anyone in the United States have any idea what forced migration on a massive scale looks like? Well... the people rendered homeless by the campfire are presenting us with a microcosmic, relatively speaking, vision of it. And guess what? We ain't prepared. Not even a little bit. It's made worse by the fact that we have a wholly negligent regime in the White House that frankly doesn't give a fuck. But on top of it all, making matters worse, and Sparky, if you need to throw something or kick furniture or something, I'll understand, and other Californians as well. The latest thing to come out of this ongoing disaster is a new QAnon conspiracy. No, really. A guy named Mike Tokes, T-O-K-E-S, because the goddess of irony is an ironic goddess, who considers himself a conservative political strategist, went to Twitter and said, I'm seeing more and more videos of very strange irregularities regarding the California fires. In this video, single homes were burned down with no damage to neighboring homes. can anyone explain this? Another highly unusual irregularity of the California fires is this is steel and asphalt bridge was on fire and it buckled. I've just spoken with a firefighter who said it would be impossible for a forest fire to create this kind of damage. This is highly coincidental. It appears the California wildfires line up in the same path as the plans for the California high-speed rail system. User submitted photos on Facebook of the California fires show weird beams of light emitting from the sky, causing fires, destruction, and property damage. These look like lasers or high-frequency direct energy weapons. Unsure what to think of this, but it was interesting to note. I don't think he knows what thinking means. Another highly unusual issue with the California wildfires is the melting of aluminum and steel. Forest fires cannot melt steel beams. Oh, Jesus, this again. Also, if you look at the first photo, only the car has been damaged, but all surrounding areas are fine? Can anyone explain this? Oh, for Pete's sake. People are dead and suffering, have lost everything, and what are the little weirdo maggot Republicans worried about? Outer space death ray beams. The ping pong comet pizza conspiracy to burn down everything in the right of way of the high-speed rail line. Yes, yes. Well, there's no percentage in assuming that at any point in time the maggots will be decent. As the saying goes, it ain't in 'em. By the way, Ron tells us, yes, 18 to get into the Herb R. Us there in Canada. I would opine that if I can take a photo of a check that's good enough to serve as a deposit to my bank, that level of security should be good enough to allow one to register a vote. But, of course, that would open up the voting process to everyone who wanted to cast a ballot, the horror, etc. Indeed, the horror. All those people who won't vote for Republicans, not voting for, you know, Republicans. And Hung Like Jesus has sent me along the story, another version of the story, about Richard Ojeda running for president. Now, you want to talk about a thorn. This is a thorn. Now, here's a guy who lost his congressional race by 12 freaking points. Didn't even come anywhere near close to winning. But the people out there who let's just put it this way. There's no way that Richard Ojeda announcing his presidential run is an organic process. This is presidential politics done a la this way to the egress. He's jumping out there early to suck up some of that good, those good fundraising dollars, and that's a big dollar. And the sad thing is, there are people who have actually been brought along into buying the notion that Ojeda is some sort of progressive person or liberal person. And I'm sorry, I will maintain that you cannot be one of those if you ever, 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 ever voted for Donald Trump. I guess that's my own version of a purity standard, but I think it. I would say that from November 8th, 2016 to the present, it has pretty well withstood the test of time. Right? Yeah. Jesus wept. But if you're curious at all, look around at who is pimping his candidacy, and you'll understand what's going on. For some reason or another, there are people out there who have a sort of distant fascination at a distance with West Virginia. A fascination at an extreme distance. Like all the way across the country distance. And who will probably make a little bit of bank running this phony baloney campaign. On some notion that he's some sort of tough-talking man of the people, anti-Trump. Bullshit. Yeah, he talks about how much damage opioids have done in West Virginia. Well, the fact of the matter is, as awful as the opioid problem is in this state, and as horribly as this state has been treated by the opioid industry, and its, hand-picked surrogates like Patrick Pill-pushing Patty Morrissey, who still occupies our Attorney General's office. Far more people have been killed by mountaintop removal than by opioids. But you just try. You just try to get Richard Ojeda to acknowledge the harm that's been done by mountaintop removal. Just try. Here's a hint. He won't acknowledge it. He can't acknowledge it. Because he's become the darling of the United Mine Workers of America, a union that would happily poison everybody in this state, and has a hand in and has had a hand in poisoning a lot of them in the name of having a job. And that's not because I don't like the UMWA. My God, my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, uncles were all members of the United Mine Workers of America. But the United Mine Workers of America is a shadow of its former self, and would sell the bones of its sainted grannies if they thought that it would keep them mining coal just a little bit longer. And that's a fact. Ron, in the far frozen north, points out, I think it's also important to note that Ojeda lost to a Republican candidate who didn't really campaign, didn't even consider a debate, did no real interviews, and generally avoided the press during her entire campaign. I suspect he would have lost to a hickory stump if you put a Republican label on it, and I think that's true, too. And he campaigned hard, I'll give him that, and got his ass handed to him. But nonetheless, the Morning Zoo crew over there on MSNBC fell for his shtick, and had him on this morning, and I just went, oh, no, really? Because, see, it fits within the bullshit trope of that third-way crap that they're so hopelessly addicted to on the MSNBC Morning Zoo Crew program. Welsh, and you know, the fact that Richard Ojeda is part of the God damn that Nancy Pelosi and her San Francisco values bullshit. The hypocrisy is almost breathtaking. Because, of course, we understand that when some guy who doesn't know beans when the bag's open about what it means to be liberal or progressive stands somewhere in West Virginia and talks about San Francisco values, what he's talking about is, you know, homosexuals. Right? Yeah. Robert in Australia with a note, bushfires. I live in a country where bushfires happen. A lot. Yes, a fire will take out every house in a street but one. It happens all the time. And it's usually something to do with the design, its location, and its immediate surroundings. And such houses get studied a lot. The idea being to formulate a house design for bushfire areas less likely to catch fire and burn down. As for beams of light coming down from the sky, we call that sunlight breaking through the clouds of smoke caused by the fire. Well, that's eminently reasonable of y'all. Does it come down in the same direction in the southern hemisphere, Robert? I'm easily confused. Marty says, we were sent home today because of the bad air, and sends along a photograph, the view from my apartment this afternoon. I realize this is a radio broadcast, so I can't show you, but I can, you know, I can kind of tell you about it. It looks downright cloudy. But I somehow don't think those are clouds. Oh, now this is interesting. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Didn't you say a while back that Trump was having an affair with someone on his staff or in his cabinet? You surmised it was Nikki Haley. Well, what if it's Mira Ricardo? She kind of fits the mold of what he goes for, right? Slavic origin, daughter of a Croatian immigrant. Could the cover story that Ricardo dissed someone on Melanoma's staff and, as a result, she no longer deserves the honor of serving in the White House be, well, just a cover story? No longer deserves the honor of serving in the White House. Seems an odd statement and hyperbolic, Darlene notes. Unless Melanoma found out about the affair and is trying to get rid of her and went public with the lame cover story while trashing Ricardel's reputation and personality, because she knows John Bolton will try to protect her. Perfect timing to push for her firing while Bolton is overseas, too. Could explain Trump's foul mood, in part. Plus, he ultimately didn't fire Ricardo, just reassigned her to another position in the administration. Sorry for the bad pun. Oh, we love bad puns here, Darlene. Just a far-out little theory of my own, but it's no more crazy than the crazy conspiracies bopping around in Trump's brain that eventually comes sputtering out of his cat-anus mouth or through his twittering thumbs for all the world to hear and read. Plus, who would put it past Trump to be having an affair on the missus even now? It crossed my mind, and I had to throw it out there. I mean, Melanoma is kind of being passive-aggressive here and probably relishing how she's be-bested and embarrassed her poor excuse for a grab-him-by-the-pussy hubby. Again, just some things that make you go, The thing is, Darlene, anything is at this point plausible. Anything. And that doesn't exactly sound too far out there. But would Melanoma actually be jealous about something like that? Does she really care about having sexy time with Julius Geezer? Does she have a particular fondness for the mushroom? Yeah, Flavio, I think that's what Darlene was getting at. Flavio says, Mira Ricardel, she reminds him of Ivanka, too.
You were great. You remind me of my daughter, Ivanka.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, let's slide over to Mozupi, where they're desperately trying to protect Cindy Hyde-Smith, the old white woman who doesn't understand that in the 21st century, in a state with a with the highest number of historical lynchings, that making jokes about being willing to show up and sit on the front row of a public hanging, it sounds just a little bit racist. Yeah. Well, Phil Bryant's the governor of Mazzuppistan, and he's come out in defense of Cindy Hyde-Smith. But instead of going straight at the thing that she said, you know, about being willing to sit in the front row at a public hanging, he tried the old tactic of, yeah, but what about? This past Tuesday, Bryant said, absolutely, we have been sensitive to race relations in this state. Wait for it. Today I talked about the genocide of over 20 million African-American children. See, in my heart, I'm confused about where the outrage is at about 20 million African-American children that have been aborted. So, to recap, toxic old white woman makes lynching joke. Toxic old white man governor of Mississippi defends her by saying, but what about the fetuses? Jesus. Well, I'm sorry, Clarity. I mentioned the mushroom, and she said, ew! Micro-toxic visuals from hell, Bob. All we got in common is our misery, Clarity, and the least we can do is share it. Let's check in with Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant, shall we? Do let's. Maybe. Because this just seems ridiculous. What about the fetuses? Yeah, I know.
Yesterday, and we stand by that statement.
Could you expand on it then, why you said it, what you meant by it, and why people in the state should not see it as offensive?
We put out the statement yesterday, and it's available, and we stand by that statement.
Senator, are you familiar with Mississippi's history of lynchings?
I put out a statement yesterday. And that's all I'm going to say about it.
You mentioned that it shouldn't be viewed with a negative.
I put out a statement yesterday, and that's all I'm going to say about it. Because see, as a clueless, nasty old racist white lady, if I say anything else, I'm probably going to say something even worse. And that's all there is to it. So y'all can ask me all the questions that you want. I'm just going to keep saying that I put out a statement yesterday. You understand?
Familiar with Mississippi's history of lynchings?
I put out a statement yesterday, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Governor, you mentioned that it shouldn't be viewed with a negative connotation. Could you at least explain how it could be
positive? I put out a statement yesterday,
positive?
And we stand by the statement, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Is that phrasing in your everyday lingo? in your vocabulary? Do you use
I put
that
out
phrase?
A statement yesterday.
Governor, you appointed her as a United States Senator. You have a huge black population that are looking for answers on why she used that kind of language. And you have worked to try to make it known that Mississippi no longer has that past.
Do you get the idea that this isn't going exactly the way that they had hoped it would when the governor trotted her out? Yeah, because I do.
When you're hearing her say, I put out a statement yesterday, and that's all I have to say.
I think she is, she's certainly addressing the fact that she has put out a statement. I can tell you, all of us in public.
Sir, what do you think about the fact that she put out a statement? Well, I think that she definitely put out a statement. Woo! This is downright Nixonian. But then again, how much of modern America isn't? That's definitely a statement that she put out. And, Governor, as a follow-up question, could you tell us what the Emancipation Proclamation was? Well, what it was, Ange, was a proclamation of emancipation. Would you care to sing a cappella for us, Governor? A cappella. Jesus Christ, Barney Fife's the governor of fucking Mississippi. Mississippi, goddamn!
Life have said things on occasion that we could have phrased better. When you make as many speeches as we do in public life, that does occur.
Yes, especially when, you know, your daddy and your granddaddy and your great-granddaddy was all a member of the Klan. We gives lots of speeches around here. And sometimes we say things we didn't mean to say or didn't mean for y'all to hear us say. I mean, goddamn, there was a locomotive horn just blowing for all it was worth. Do you have any idea how much it costs us to get them locomotive horns to blowing while we saying we'd sit at the front row of a goddamn lynching, son? It costs a lot, that's what I'm telling you. And still, y'all managed to hear it. So we hear it, and she gave a statement. Did you not hear her say she gave a statement, son? You one of them outside agitators, son?
But I know this woman, and I know her heart. I knew it when I appointed her. I know it now. She meant no offense by that statement. There was nothing in her heart of ill will.
See, that doesn't matter. The person doing the offending does not get to determine whether or not the people who are a part of a culture that was historically more subjected to lynching than any other group in that state's history gets to be offended by the lynching joke. I mean, the fact that it's Mississippi in 2018 and there are still lynching jokes. Well, I like him so much that if he invited me to a public hanging, I'd be the first. I'd sit in the first row. Cause see, here's the thing. That's what that old line is. Cindy Hyde Smith cleaned it up a little bit. Because the line is originally, if he invited me to a lynching, I'd be in the first row. Public hanging. Bullshit. They don't talk like that in Mississippi, Stan. And if we still have any members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Mississippi, Stan, they will probably tell you that I am correct. I mean, okay, so we're gonna hear it at real speed in Cornpone. Why, he's such a fine feller, if he invited me to a lynch and I'd sit in the first row. Now, why, he's such a fine feller that if he invited me to a public hanging, I would sit in the front row. It's as obvious as the hood on her head. But no, keep trying, Phil. Keep trying, buddy.
...that we could have phrased better. When you make as many speeches as we do in public life, that does occur. But I know this woman, and I know her heart. I knew it when I appointed her. I know it now.
Now?
She meant no offense. by that statement. There was nothing in her heart of ill will. Now, in a political campaign, people can make anything you say what they want it to say. They can spin it. They can go on social media and...
No, Phil. If she had not made a lynching joke, no one would be saying she made a lynching joke. But she made a lynching joke, and people have a right to be not just offended, but goddamned well outraged that she made a lynching joke, oh, by the way, in a runoff election against a black guy. Huh.
Accuse you of all sorts of things.
Governor,
she feels certain that, I believe I won't speak for her, but that her statement spoke to it. Absolutely.
That's another way of Phil Bryant to say that's the shittiest damn statement I've ever seen made.
Absolutely, we have been sensitive to race relations in this state. I brought the President of the United States here to open the Civil Rights Museum.
And golly damn, Ronald Reagan done come here back in 1980 to open his campaign in the home of the Klan. We're sensitive to race relations in Mississippi.
And African-American leadership that would fail to even come to the event because the President of the United States was there. Today I talked about the genocide of over 20 million African-American children. You see, in my heart, I am confused about where the outrage is at about 20 million African-American children that have been aborted.
Well, if that feller's so fine, I wonder if he invited Cindy Hyde Smith to an abortion, she'd sit in the front row. Ooh, I bet them Republican white folks in Mississippi would be, they'd be all het up if somebody said that about her. People would probably be getting hit in the face with gloves, and they'd be sword fighting and pistol duels. Yeah. But of course, the black genocide trope is big in the fetus fetish community. Meanwhile, a woman by the name of Lori Bertram Roberts, who is the co-founder and executive director of the Mississippi Reproductive Freedom Fund, said, "Am I offended? Do I think it's disgusting and vile? Absolutely. And I absolutely think it's racist. No one from the anti-choice movement almost never frames white women who have the most abortions in the country as having committed genocide. It's a specific charge that they only lodge at black women. It's a specific type of shaming and stigmatizing." It might be worth noting that there is no particular ethnicity that makes up the majority of abortions, but most abortion patients are white. Mm-hmm. There's even a word that's been coined. When you hear one of these stuffy old mush-mouthed fetus fetishists go on about black genocide, the word is misogynoir, misogynoir. That means a particularly virulent form of misogyny directed specifically at women of color. It was coined by a black feminist scholar by the name of Moya Bailey. Yeah. But she's made a statement and she stands by it. Yes, she does. Gall darn it. But her problems continue to mount. Cindy Hyde Smith made a statement about her lynching joke. A note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Well, hell, At least the governor didn't talk about all the black-on-black crime in Chicago. Deem yourself lucky. Oh, give him a minute, Ron. Ron continues and said, speaking of channeling, the governor was channeling Foghorn Leghorn. I say, boy, she made a statement. She got right sassy in her repetition, didn't she? Oh, I think she was peeved. She was positively peeved. Michael and Madison, yes, you did. Did I hear that right? Did the governor say there was nothing in her heart of ill will? Yeah, and Michael, once again, as Tracy so often says to me, get out of my brain. Because Michael says, I'm a bit rusty on my sentence diagramming, but I believe of ill will modifies her heart, and there was nothing in it. It's similar to Trump's skull. Yeah, because I heard that, and I said, so, Governor, you're admitting she has a heart of ill will? They're in the hands of the goddess of irony. And she owns them every time they open their mouths. They cannot help but give themselves away. Because they are, as Dennis Green once famously said, who we thought they are. Yeah. By the way, going back to Darlene's theory about Trump and Mira Ricardo, Ron in the Frozen North, as opposed to Ron and Raleigh, says, with respect to Trump dipping his wick with the White House staff, I would point out that it's hard for hookers to get the security clearance needed to get into the White House. That narrows the pool of targets down to all those nervous female interns and staffers already inside the enclave of peace and freedom. That said, I think Sarah is safe. I'll see myself out. Nobody's throwing you out, Ron. Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags would be safe in a buzzard's roost. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Cindy Hyde-Smith continues to have problems with that whole talking in front of microphones thing. After her lynching joke, because that's what it was, she got to talking about voting and who needed to vote and, you know, who really didn't. And I'm not sure about the quality of the audio here, so let's see. Yeah, it doesn't come across real well. It's almost like she's waiting for the train whistle to blow. Damn, things are expensive. But what she said, talking about people voting, and then they remind me that there's a lot of liberal folks in those other schools who that maybe we don't want to vote. Maybe we want to make it just a little more difficult. And I think it's a great idea. That happened in Columbus, Mississippi on the second day of November. Now, what's interesting is when she was questioned about it by Burgess Everett at Politico, Cindy Hyde-Smith campaign spokesperson Melissa Scallon, she said, well, that their video was selectively edited. And she was, well, quote, obviously, Senator Hyde-Smith was making a joke, and clearly the video was selectively edited. The liberal media wants to talk about anything other than Mike Espy's record of corruption. record of corruption, doing a lot of heavy lifting there to simply cover for the word blackness. Now, that's a complete sentence, or a couple of them. And then they remind me there's a lot of liberal folks in those other schools who that maybe we don't want to vote. Maybe we want to make it just a little more difficult. I think that's a great idea. No selective editing there. The lynching remark was supposed to be a joke, too. So she just don't want them liberals to vote. Once again, in a state like Mississippi, liberals doing a lot of heavy lifting to replace the word black. What's this, Darlene? Darlene in Connecticut says, come on, Bob. For melanoma, it's not about the sex or lack thereof with Trump's mushroom-shaped penis. Puke fest, just writing that. It's about waiting for him to kick off this mortal coil so she can get whatever he has left of a fortune that isn't going to Ivanka. Mel knows full well she's the third and that her husband has a pattern and a penchant for leaving wives for something new and Slavic. Particularly as Trump is becoming more mentally and emotionally unstable, she won't be taking any chances when it's all so close. He's under more stress than ever, so... dot, dot, dot. So that's a pretty good start, I'd say, on Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we've made a passable start at knocking out some of this godforsaken fundraising deficit. We are now down to $490. Thanks very kindly to our buddy Anatole for that. $490. And if we could... can we knock out maybe another 90 or so, say by 8, and then we'll go to work on bringing it down under 400? Or maybe, let's try to knock out $100 in the next, 43 minutes. Can we do that? That's 10 folks at $10, one person at 100, 5 at 20, you know, the ciphering business. But it would be tremendously helpful if we could. So that the Friday on the Front Porch community miracle isn't at such a breathtaking level. But we got $490 to go. Let's try to get it down by $100 as quickly as we can. We'll take a little break. Phone lines are open. You know how to reach the program. Toll free if you don't have some sort of nationwide long distance calling plan with your cell phone or your hardline phone. Toll free. 844-843-4676. The number associated with that also is 304-640-2829. If you want a direct dial, 304-640-2829. You can always get through on 304-574-8178, as long as there's nobody on it. And, of course, there's Skype to Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. All that having been said, let's take a minute and check in with Brad and Desi and the Green News Report. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob, who's going nowhere, but I'm going to sit here and listen to the Green News. Stick around. You listen to it, too.
It's Thursday, November 14, 2018.
Home after home, neighborhood after neighborhood, completely destroyed.
The death toll continues to rise as California wildfires rage on.
We have a real challenge here, threatening our whole way of life.
While state officials grapple with preparing for tomorrow's disasters. Climate change may impact male fertility, new study shows. Plus,
we kind of just got to roll up our sleeves and do it ourselves. And if we want to make this change, we have to do it.
New Democrats push old guard to take bold action on climate change.
All of that bold action and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And at a time like this, it is hard to know the right thing to say. But for the wrong thing to say, let's check the president's Twitter feed.
Let's not. You're welcome. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm sorry to say we have to start with more grim news coming out of California out here.
Yes, those three devastating wildfires in both Northern and Southern California. As of airtime, the fires have killed nearly 60 people statewide, with at least 80 still listed as unaccounted for. The historic Camp Fire in Northern California is now the nation's deadliest wildfire in over 100 years. Victims have filed the first lawsuit of what is likely to be many against electric utility Pacific Gas and Electric, alleging negligence by PG&E in maintaining their overhead power lines. The state's seasonal rains have still not materialized, and no rain is in the forecast through at least Thanksgiving.
Do we know now, in fact, that it was the PG&E power lines that sparked these fires?
Not yet. An investigation is underway. It does seem likely. Repeated devastating wildfires over the last few years have pushed California officials to begin the monumental task of adapting the state's infrastructure, emergency response, and its insurance sector to grapple with more frequent extreme weather disasters caused and made worse by man-made global warming and the resulting public health emergencies and the long-term economic costs of recovery. In an interview with CBS News, fire consultant and former Sacramento Fire Chief Kurt Henke said those meetings began a few months ago.
We are working, of course, together with both the insurance industry, the utilities industry, all stakeholder groups to try to figure out how to address these new dramatic climate-driven events that are going to be the new norm that we're going to be dealing with for the next 50 to 100 years.
In my humble opinion, it is a conversation that folks in every state should be demanding from their elected officials. Meanwhile, global warming may reduce male fertility, cutting sperm counts in half due to higher temperatures, at least for beetles. A UK study found that in the lab, simulated heat waves damaged the sperm of insects. Repeated heat waves made them nearly sterile, and the damage could be passed down to the beetle's offspring.
Well, thankfully, it's only beetles.
Well, a different study found that male sperm counts are declining and climate change may be to blame.
Oh.
And a different study on top of that recently found that populations of flying insects have declined by more than 75%. Over the last 30 years in Germany, but the researchers say more study is needed to determine if global warming is a factor there. In other news, a high-ranking Trump Environmental Protection Agency official has been indicted in Alabama on charges related to his previous job as a consultant. EPA Region 4 Director Trey Glenn, a Trump appointee, was indicted this week on state corruption charges for working to prevent a severely polluted Birmingham neighborhood from being added to the federal Superfund list because it would have forced the industries responsible for the pollution, his clients, to help pay for the cleanup.
Has this wildly corrupt EPA official resigned?
Not yet.
Of course not.
And in Washington, Democratic Congresswoman-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York joined dozens of climate activists with the Sunrise Movement at a sit-in at the office of House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi on Tuesday. The protest was in support of forming a congressional select committee for a Green New Deal to begin the process of crafting concrete, evidence-based climate action legislation that is equal to what scientists say is necessary. Ocasio-Cortez responded to critics of the Pelosi protest, saying it's intended to bolster Democrats' ambition to act on climate change.
This is an encouragement of her, and this is to show that we're here to back up bold action and that she will be supported in that.
I think Nancy Pelosi can use all the support she can find right now. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'll be there for you.
Following up on the fire story, Terrace with a note, more on the fires. Many school districts in the Bay Area will close tomorrow. We soldier on, optimistic that this will end. What choice do we have? Hoping for rain. We are verging on twilight zone each day. This not only continues, but worsens. Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty gentle assessment. And the thing is, try to convince a maggot that this is related to climate change. It obviously is. The drier the countryside becomes, the more likely it is that fires will break out. Oh, and hey, while I'm at it, just for the fun of it, wouldn't it be cool if everybody had solar panels in an area that's prone to wildfires that spread like, well, wildfire. Especially in light of the fact that it may well be that Pacific Gas and Electric's transmission lines were the origin of this latest horror. Just saying. It is 26 minutes past the hour. Thanks very kindly to Charlene and Will in Chicago. They hit a nice lick there and took us down from 490 to $450. So we got can we knock down say 50, you know, $60 in the next half hour or so, and then we'll go to work on some more and get us down under the $400 mark so that we're not looking at $600 tomorrow on Friday on the front porch. $60 more gets us below $400. And again, the PayPal interface is over at headon.live. Brother Deacon Asa checking in. Listening from the Titanic Quarter in Belfast this evening. Too bad it's not Tuesday. Well, that's the first check-in we've ever had from the Titanic Quarter in Belfast. I have a feeling that there's probably less Titanic right-wing intellect going on there, but then again, kind of guessing. And Marty pointing out, who will help PG&E pay for the damages from their negligence? I think we all know. The rubes. I mean, the ratepayers. Mm-hmm. So we are, this is Thursday, so we are 6 days removed from the 80th anniversary of Kristallnacht. I should have mentioned that last Friday. I didn't. I regret it. But yes, last Friday was the 80th anniversary of Kristallnacht. And so consequently, it's more than a little bit chilling when I read via the Baltimore Sun that a production of Fiddler on the Roof came through Baltimore. And it's a wonderful show if you go in for musicals. I'm not that big of a musicals guy, but they can be quite enjoyable. I'm enough of a realist. I don't think people run around breaking into song, but that's because I'm a crank. It was performed at the Hippodrome Theater last night. And that's when somebody up in the balcony decided to exercise him some freedom of speech. This is how the audience responded. Everybody down on the floor is looking up at the balcony because during intermission at the theater, I mean, this is literally a close approximation of the old line about not being able to yell fire in a crowded theater, because a guy up in the balcony at the Hippodrome Theater in Baltimore stood up, stuck out his right arm in a stiff-armed Nazi salute at a play about Jews and began hollering, "Heil Hitler, Heil Trump." At that point in time, people began to run because they justifiably thought it was the front end of another outbreak of National Ruble Association Second Amendment freedom. Samit Verma, according to the Baltimore Sun, was sitting up in the balcony, and he heard the shouting and saw the man holding his arm up in the stiff-arm Nazi salute. Ushers ran over while members of the audience began making their way out of the theater as quickly as they could. In an email to the Baltimore Sun, Samit Verma said, "The people around me appeared to be quite shaken by the incident. There were some people in tears." Rich Scher was in the audience. He said people around him thought it was the beginning of a shooting. "People started running," he told the paper. "I'll be honest, I was waiting to hear a gunshot. I thought, here we go." But remember, I said a moment ago, this is literally within spitting distance of shouting fire in a crowded theater, which is always cited as the reason, as a reason, for which the government can use as a prior restraint on speech. The theory being that if you yell fire in a crowded theater, people will run, people will get trampled, people will get killed, whether there's a fire or not. Well, the text from the Baltimore Sun says Baltimore police were called and security escorted the man out a few minutes later, and the show must go on. The audience cheered as the Nazi was dragged out. Then the following language. Police issued a stop ticket to the man, but he was not arrested. A stop ticket in Baltimore police lexicon is the least severe measure police can take when responding to a complaint followed by citations and arrests. In other words, a stop ticket says, stop doing that. You can't be fined for a stop ticket. You can't be sent to jail for a stop ticket. And you don't even have to show up in court for a stop ticket. Police spokesman Matt Jablow, J-A-B-L-O-W, responding in an email to an inquiry from the Baltimore Sun, said, "As reprehensible as those words are, they are considered protected free speech because nobody was directly threatened." Holy fuck. Do we finally begin to understand? I mean, I know I understand. Most of y'all do too. What I mean when I say that we have fetishized the First Amendment. At the very least, standing up and yelling Heil Hitler, Heil Trump in the middle of a play in a theater, okay, at intermission, whatever, was still meant to incite people into some sort of panicked response. You may presume intent from the actions. There is no benign circumstance in which one jumps to one's feet in a theater in Baltimore and yells, Heil Hitler, Heil Trump. None whatsoever. For the sake of context, he did this as intermission began, right after the scene that closes the act, in which a Jewish wedding is stopped because of a pogrom in Russia. And a pogrom, of course, is a generalized racist anti-Semitic attack on a Jewish community that includes everything from burning down houses, stealing property, to massacring Jews. People of color in this country who remember what was done to places like Rosewood, Florida, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, will be intimately familiar with the concept of a pogrom. Pogroms sometimes were accompanied by hangings, at which I presume some of the Tsar's men would be invited to sit on the first row, a la Mississippi Senator Cindy Hyde Smith. Not even so much as the possibility of a $5 fine. No court costs, because he will not be hailed into court and admonished against his Nazism and his attempt to cause a riot that would make people die or be grievously injured in a panic. So Fiddler on the Roof will continue to play. It's probably playing about to play right now at the Hippodrome Theater in Baltimore. The Baltimore police have said that they will station officers at the Hippodrome during the remaining shows that run through Sunday. The Hippodrome Theater didn't ask them to be there. On the other hand, if another guy jumps up and yells, Heil Hitler, Heil Trump, he'll be told to stop too. But he won't be hailed into court either, because the Baltimore police is of the opinion that yelling Heil Hitler, Heil Trump in a theater full of innocent theatergoers is protected speech. Speech that is deliberately insightful is deemed to be protected. So according to the Baltimore police, yelling fire in a crowded theater is no longer the classic example of restrained speech that is legally restrained. It's an example of protected political speech. Somebody going to get hurt. Then again, a lot of somebodies already have. You know what I'm looking for? Anything that gives the name of the guy who did it. We've got more testimony, for instance, from Rich Scher. He said, "My heart was just racing. I didn't even really pay attention to the second act." He's 49 years old. Theodore Kasser said, of Fiddler on the Roof, said, "It's a story inherently about Jews being made to feel not welcome. And here's this bozo who decided to express that he felt we should not be welcome here either." But it's not just that. The guy said, "Heil Hitler, Heil Trump." In other words, he wants Trump to be Hitler-esque. He looks for Trump to follow the same sort of course of conduct that Adolf Hitler did. But nowhere in this story do you find the name of the guy who tried to start a riot inside a theater that could easily have resulted in countless deaths. He gets protected because his declaration of fascist ideology and his yearning for bloody murder, well, that's protected. You yell Heil Hitler, Heil Trump in a crowded theater, and you get to have your identity protected? How many people left that theater wondering if they knew who that guy was? Or, since he'd only been issued a stop ticket, whether he was going to go home and come back with a gun. Or come back another night with a gun. Or maybe shoot up a synagogue. Or a shul. But that's okay. Because according to Officer Matt Joblo, "As reprehensible as those words are, they are considered protected free speech because nobody was directly threatened." Everybody in that room was directly threatened. Every Jew in that theater was directly threatened. Every person who opposes anti-Semitism in that theater was directly threatened by that howling declaration, "Heil Hitler, Heil Trump." But this, you see, is how the whole Nazi problem that this country has becomes immeasurably worse. Because they're protected. Because we wouldn't want them to have a sad and feel like we didn't like them just because they were fucking Nazis. Yeah. So just a review, the president of the United States yesterday called the Nazi fascist bully boys out into the streets for essentially gang warfare. And then on the same evening, a man stands up in a theater and yells, "Heil Hitler, Heil Trump." And oh well, that's why we've got a First Amendment. On the other hand, in a federal courtroom. U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen ruled that the First Amendment does not shield Andrew Anglin, the publisher of the Daily Stormer, from being sued because people who follow him engaged in anti-Semitic harassment of a Jewish woman and her family in Montana. That's a little bit of a win. The lawsuit against the publisher of the Daily Stormer will go forward, according to that ruling. But attorney Mark Randazza says that the ruling is dangerous for free speech. Because, you see, we can't have free speech in Merca unless we allow the goddamn Nazis to torture people via both online and offline methods. Attorney Randazza said he said, "Well, I can see the allure of not wanting to rule in favor of the Nazi. The rule needs to be the same no matter what your view is. And if you can shut down a Nazi, you can shut down anybody." I'm paraphrasing, but that's the argument, and it's a bullshit argument. So the plaintiff, Tanya Gersh, will go forward in her suit with her claims against Anglin for an invasion of privacy, for the infliction of emotional distress on her and her family, and for his violation of the anti-intimidation law of the state of Montana because he directly called for, a troll storm against her, her husband, and her 12-year-old little boy. The decision was carefully crafted. Judge Dana Christensen's order said that just because Andrew Anglin has a morally and factually indefensible worldview doesn't mean he doesn't have free speech protections. Quote, "It hardly makes sense to conclude, as Anglin contends, that Anglin's posts and sponsored troll storm are entitled to additional protection because of their anti-Semitic content." So he's not going to be able to hide his overt racist acts behind a claim that he was just a free speech. That seems a correct ruling to me. Especially when you consider that the plaintiff was harassed by hundreds of people. That her family was threatened online and by phone calls and by mail. And the heart of Anglin's defense is basically, "Well, I got me some free speech. And, well, it ain't my fault if people actually do things when I tell them to do them." No, really, that's his defense. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. The judge continued, "Anglin did not use his speech about Gersh to raise awareness for issues consonant with the alt-right agenda. Rather, construing the allegations in the complaint as true, Anglin exploited the prejudices widely held among his readers to specifically target one individual." And I guess that's the difference between Baltimore and this case. In this case, he targeted one individual or one family. The Nazi did. In Baltimore, the guy targeted an entire theater full of people, and so the threat was deemed not specific enough. Oh, well. Bill in Allentown says, Hey, Bob, what the fuck is going on in this country? I know exactly what it is. Fascism wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross. I'll bet the guy's a Christian. I won't take that bet because I would lose it. I guarantee you he's a Christian. And not just any Christian. He's not, he's not some liberation theology Roman Catholic. He's not some Episcopalian. He's not a member of the local Unitarian congregation. No, this guy's probably a Baptist or a Pentecostal or a Methodist or one of those weirdo Lutherans or weirdo Presbyterians. Or maybe, maybe a member of some megachurch. Or maybe he just adheres to a private Christianity. But we'll never know because we're not allowed to know who he is. Because his identity is protected. How about that? Yeah. All right, 10 minutes before 8, trying to knock down 60 more bucks by 8 o'clock. So far, we've got 60 more bucks to go. Let's run over to the stress line and see who's on the toll-free. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
Well, hey, Jim, how are you?
About the same, but I was up to you last.
Well, I want you to know that I was actually thinking of you when I said Episcopalians and not Episcopals.
Well, you know, strangely enough, they asked me if I wanted to see a Catholic, and I said, well, I'm facing cancer here. And, yeah, I wouldn't mind talking to one. And they sent me a Black Baptist chaplain who was very nice, and he said, I see you have a cross around your neck with, and I said, yes, I do. And I told him I was one of the Catholics who plucked my Latin. But I said, I don't want to waste your time making jokes. This is what I said to him. I said, how come churches do not have to pay taxes? And I think that kind of really took him down like a bolt from a crossbow. And I said, the reason I'm saying this to me, I said, the amount of tax relief that are given to these churches, particularly these mega churches, would go toward a long way toward helping people who need food, clothing, and shelter.
Oh, you mean toward doing some of that Matthew 25 stuff?
Yes, sir. And I said, that's exactly what was said, and he basically said, I see that you are not in support of church. I said, I didn't say that. I said,
I'm surprised you didn't tell him you were a member of the Chosen Frozen, or the Frozen Chosen.
I did tell him I was. I said, we are basically Catholics who flunked our Latin, and we are called Episcopalians. And then he basically, after I mentioned the thing about churches being exempt under taxes and what they could do with that money to help people who needed some type of relief from very serious problems, he said, well, I've got to go. Normally I'll offer to have a word of prayer with you or something like that, but no, he couldn't even handle that. I thought you might find that interesting.
Well, I'm not qualified to offer them, but blessings upon you, Jim.
I know you're not. And, I faced this 2 years ago, which is something that's come back. So that's just the way life is, and you got to look at it that way. It is what it is, and it ain't what it's not. So there you go, and there you have it.
There we go. That's about it.
That's just about what you can do. And so, this business of this young man who did this thing with Trump, when you first said it, I thought to myself, well, at least he's got the two in the same boat. And I thought,
we don't know how young or old the guy is. I mean, we don't know who he is.
I was just wondering, was he saying that as a criticism of Trump by equating by mentioning Hitler and Trump in the same breath, or was he really, really sincerely tried to applaud the Fuhrer and our present-day president.
That's a good word. That's a good word. But
I just wondered.
Well,
again,
it comes at the end of an act and a scene of a pogrom, and that apparently so inspired him that he jumped up and yelled what he yelled.
When you first mentioned it, you didn't mention the name of the play until later, and then I realized, oh, God, well, that's exactly what he was doing. This is just another effort of fledgling Nazi party in this country. But, you know, I don't think it's that fledgling anymore.
I was about to say very same thing. I don't think you can call it fledgling anymore, Jim. It's not perched on the edge of the nest and waiting for its wings to dry. It's out and flying on its own.
Yeah, it is. And it's becoming well, you know, you and I have talked about this ever since for a long time, and you know, I think some people probably thought I was being overly suspicious about this sort of thing, but, you know, over the years, I've been around a long time, Bob, and I've kept my ears on the ground, and I'm from a part of the country where this sort of thought seems to really take up root, and that's one reason I've been, to tell you the truth, for the past 20 years, I've been scared to death. Because I could see it coming back. And, you know, I studied a great deal about that period of history by the historical part of my MA. It was from 1914 to 1945. And I've had to read just about every book about the emergence of National Socialism and how Hitler came to power. And the consequences of his actions, and I've always just viewed him as something that's I don't think he'll ever go away, because you're going to always find people who really think that he was right, and he just.
In other words, there are always going to be some people in one's society who are demonstrably and pathologically sick.
Well, yeah, they're sick, but they're well enough to put on those boots, and they're well enough to get out in the street, and they're well enough to, you know, to create a lot of bad things that will happen to good people. I mean, they're well enough to, if they should really come to power, to come to your front door at 4 o'clock in the morning and take you downtown. Wherever it is. I mean, it would amaze you to know that a lot of people in this country feel like that Uncle Adolf wasn't so bad after all. And
well, especially not early in his reign.
Well, you know, for example, he did do some good things in Germany at first. And then after September 1st, 1939, and even before that, I mean, he periodically did some good things. I guess the first real bad.
Well, he did things that made the German people. He did things that made the German people feel good about themselves, as long as they weren't Jewish.
Right, and they had been made to feel pretty bad, and things were pretty bad in Germany before he came to power. But, you know. But he came to power, number one, knowing fully well what he was going to do. And after September 15th, 1935, when he passed the Nuremberg Laws, it was all down here from there. He had done his share of good. And it's such a pity that assassination attempt, that one where the guy put the bomb in the beer hall in Munich,
right.
If he had not left 15, if he had stayed for the duration of his planned speech, he would have probably gone down in history as one of the greatest Germans of all. And I don't know if his programs would have been carried out. I don't know. but he certainly has some pretty devout followers who really wanted to engineer that stuff. But I guess this program probably would. But it's unfortunate that we're seeing this stuff again in this country. I noticed you noticed that when you were in Germany that you had seen some type of very prominent resurgence of fascism.
Yeah, that was the AfD, and they're even more resurgent now than they were then, the Alternative for Deutschland. They just call themselves AfD because they can't call themselves NAZI.
Well, you know, unfortunately, we have a way of just making the same mistake twice, and we just never really profit from our mistakes, and it looks like that those guys at Nuremberg who tried to have those trials, it looks as though their mission was not quite a success, now, doesn't it?
Indeed. Here's a little piece of trivia you might find interesting, Jim.
Yes, sir.
According to Agence France-Presse, a pendant that was owned by Marie Antoinette, consisting of pearls and diamonds, went for $36 million at auction yesterday. They thought it would probably go for around $2 million. It went for $36.
I don't doubt it. Listen, if you go to the Hillwood in Washington, the home of the home of Mrs. Post,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about that, she's got her desk in which she will be able to hide her little letters concerning her boyfriends and the affair of the necklace and all that. And could you imagine what that desk would go for if it were to be put on the block at Sotheby's? I mean, Hillwood is just a wonderful place to go spend the day. But anyway, yeah, she's got that very desk that Marie Antoinette used. And I'm not surprised. It's just amazing. I wonder who bought it.
It's not disclosed. But there were 10 pieces, and the provenance, you know, the provenance was tracked from Marie Antoinette to Maria Therese, and on down, you know, on down the line to the present day.
Wow. Somebody was awfully lucky to have a little piece of costume jewelry. That's what Marie Antoinette probably would have considered it. Who knows? Well, you know, it's amazing what you know, the value of things. By the way, setting aside from here I can look up my window and see a huge WV for your Harvard on the Bond is certainly well advertised, and it's also spinning so.
Oh yeah, I'm not surprised. The weather that far, you know, you're only 11 miles from Pennsylvania there, Jim, and the weather can be dramatically different from what it is here.
Well, and so are the people. This is not typical West Virginia. It's not like southeastern or southwestern West Virginia. Just not at all.
No. Up north of the Little Kanawha River is an entirely different West Virginia.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely.
The accent is different, and the cultural ties are much more toward Pittsburgh, which is not necessarily a bad thing. You've got a much more ethnically diverse population up there. When the coal companies were trying to strike break by bringing in unskilled labor, they brought in a lot of Italian immigrants, and they settled in the northern part of the state. That's why the original and still best in the world pepperoni roll is to be found in Fairmont.
I see. Unfortunately, I can't get out to explore all those things. I wish I could.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet your mobility is a little bit limited right now.
But, you know, this is the best place in this state where I could be.
Oh, without a doubt. For West Virginia, it is a fantastic hospital.
It is. And it's the best place where I could possibly be, and I'm just glad to be here. And so I miss my cat, but she's being taken care of, and it's like I said before, this has not been a real good year, but I hope it gets better. I'm not sure what kind of plans they have for me here, but I just try to not think about it. That's all you can do. I'm watching Anderson Cooper, and I'm looking at Trump, who's just about to blow his top, isn't he?
Oh, he's gone. I think the best that they can hope for on any given day is that they can get him, they can keep him held together with some batshit and baling wire and some heavy medication.
Yeah, I'd wonder about that, but he's been, as they say, under a lid or something like that.
Yes.
And I just wonder when that team is going to move in on him and start their operations concerning his activities. It says here the Washington Post president's lawyer says that Mueller's questions create more issues for us legally than others. I guess they do. You know, he's really been able to do an awful lot of bad stuff since he took his since he really came on this earth. That's for damn sure. I understand that he was a real bully when he was a boy, and his old man kept encouraged that, and his old man just said, regardless, it's only one real question, and that's to get the better part of people at any price and win by any means possible. And Trump was encouraged from.
Well, I think he slapped the boy around a little bit too.
Yeah, I probably did. I mean, I've heard all kinds of things. They were trying to explain some guy who was just, maybe it was on your program, that when this one kid was a boy, he was in the upper berth of a two level bed, and his father reached out with his arms to catch him. He said, "I want you to jump." And when he did, he let the kid hit the floor. And he said, "I want you to use that as a lesson. Don't ever trust anybody." Now, I don't know if that's apocryphal or not, and I'm not sure to whom that lesson was given, but I would assume that Trump's probably had his share of lessons very similar to that. You know? Well, I say the child is truly the father of the man in many, many, many particular places. And of course, you could apply that to Adolf Hitler. You could apply that to Joseph Stalin. I mean, Stalin's father used to literally. Stalin was only 5'4". You realize he was that small?
No, I didn't.
He was little. And his father was a shoemaker, and he was drunk all the time. And he would get so drunk that in Georgia, a drunk in a bad way would have to sell his belt in order to buy more booze. And they said that Stalin's father was that much of an alcoholic, and that in spite of Stalin's mother's efforts to get him into the priesthood, I think he bolted at a very early age, and he took off for other endeavors. But I know that both of them were given severe beatings as children. And they both, I think, were doted upon by their mothers. And it's interesting how that type of psychology plays into it. And just drawing that little vignette and hoping it will, arouse some interest. I just wonder, have you been on your barbecue lately?
No, the weather really hasn't been too conducive I don't mind messing around in the cool, but I do kind of object to getting soaked by the rain. But I'll be doing some hardcore barbecue in the weekend after Thanksgiving, because I'm Mike Malloy's big book signing party is taking place down in Georgia, and I'm going to go down there and do up a bunch of barbecue for one of the meals that weekend.
How is he, and what book are you talking about? I don't listen to him that much anymore.
Well, Mike is, he's cruising right along, and he's written a memoir.
Really? I know he had mentioned earlier that he was creating some type of book, and he was selling early chapters to it or something like that. What's the name of it going to be? Do you know?
I'm looking for it here. Where'd it go?
That's okay. He seems to live in a pretty nice part of Georgia.
Well, I mean, it's a lovely area. I mean, of course, I'm rather fond of Atlanta myself, but it's a nice area there, as he describes it in the foothills of the North Georgia mountains.
Well, he lives sort of in the mountains, is that it, or just in the hills?
Yeah, foothills. Yeah, not the hardcore Appalachia part.
Well, I'm sure you'll have a good time down there with a lot of fellow travelers in that area, and I wonder how well his book will sell. It would appear to be as though he's really been around the bend, and he's been through a lot of experiences pursuing his beliefs.
Oh yeah, he's been I consider him the dean of progressive or liberal talk radio. I mean, I go back, you know, I started listening to Malloy in 1986.
Well, you know, I heard him on Air America.
Right. He started out at WSB in Atlanta, went from there to WLS in Chicago, then that radio network attempt that the UAW got behind, and then Air America.
Well, and Air America sort of went under, right?
Oh, Air America folded spectacularly.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I've often wondered if that was a financial crisis they had. Or...
Oh, it was a rolling disaster of mismanagement.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's unfortunate that.
The idea was good in its inception, but in its execution, it was too rife with miscues and mistakes to be able to survive. I mean, when you're hemorrhaging $80,000 a day, well.
That's a lot of money. Oh, I know who the guy was that they told the story on that chokes the bed. It was Roger Ailes. He's from Ohio, or was from Ohio, but he be dead now.
Yes.
That's what they're saying, that may have happened to him. And God, did he have a checkered past. I didn't realize that Ailes was a Nixon aide.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know anything about his history until there was a special on PBS about some things like that, and they had different people were interviewed who had worked for him, and one lady, you know, was supposed to be headed for a real high career and with Fox, and so Ailes told her in the car, he said, you know, you're playing with the big boys now. And she said, I guess so. And Ailes told her, said, if you want to play with them, you got to lay with them.
Yeah, he was a sleazy son of a bitch.
And, you know, she told him that she had to take that into reconsideration. And less than a week later, he fired her, and then she was circulated on a do not hire list. He tried to ruin her entire career. He was a real evil bastard.
And by the way, the name of Mike's book is Colored Ice Cream.
Colored Ice Cream.
Yes.
Wow, okay. A curious title. Well, actually, it'll be an interesting book, and I wish you well in this, in all the selling. I wish you a pleasant trip down there. I'm sure they'll have good barbecue and stuff. How long is this selling party going to be?
It's basically a Friday through a Sunday morning after Thanksgiving.
Oh, well, I wish you and your family and all the people involved a very pleasant Thanksgiving holiday, and I guess it's going to be really chilly, what they say. It's going to be a rather curious Thanksgiving holiday for me, but that's okay. I've had curious ones before. And there it is, and there you have it.
Well, Jim, you just keep getting better, all right? You had some well wishes coming along. Buddy Todd in South Carolina, Stan, said best wishes to Jim. Brother Deacon Asa pointed out how strong and vigorous your voice sounds, so hopefully you're on the mend.
Well, I hope so, too, but I really appreciate their thoughtfulness and their consideration, and like I said to Scott the other night, so thank you all. And you have a good night, and we'll talk soon, I guess.
All right. You take care, Jim.
I'll do the best.
All right.
You too, sir.
Bye now.
Good night.
Our buddy Jim, up in my old stomping grounds at the hospital run by Harvard on the Mon. Best wishes and healing thoughts to Jim. Lines open, 304-574-8178, if you'd like to join in the conversation. 16 past the hour. I hate to say it, but we're still trying to get down to the to below the $400 mark in fundraising. We've got $60 to get there and about 43 minutes to do it in. Thanks to everybody who's helped out so much knocking out some of it. I'm just hoping we can get down below the $400 mark this evening, so tomorrow we'll be down below the $600 mark for Friday on the front porch. There's still quite a good bit to go through this evening. From time to time, we talk about corporate welfare. And I remember years and years and years ago when the Chinese government bought Smithfield Meats. I thought, you know, this is probably not a good idea. Well, it turns out it's not. Thanks to the Trump regime's bailout of farmers, we're going to pay something like $240,000 to the Chinese government to buy Smithfield hams from them. The Chinese conglomerate WH Group is going to sell $144,000 or 144,000 pounds of ham products to we the people. As part of the program that's supposed to alleviate the economic anxiety of U.S. farmers who have been gutted by the insistence of this mad regime upon engaging in a trade war with China. No kidding. A week ago, the Agriculture Department said that they were going to let out $7.5 million in money for the purchase of commodities to bail out American farmers. And beyond the money that Smithfield is already knows it's going to get, they may yet get more. Overall, the Trump regime says that they'll spend about $12 billion for the bailout program. There'll be direct cash payments to farmers, many of those soybean farmers. But don't get too beat up about this, citizen. It's not like we're going to buy ham from China. We're only buying ham produced in the United States and giving the money to China, or as Trump pronounces it, China. Tony Corbo at Food and Water Watch said, highly suspicious that this announcement came a day after the midterm elections. Congress needs to exercise oversight of this program. This is an example of corporate welfare at its worst. And then the USDA whined, we don't have the ability to police whether money will eventually filter to the Chinese. The department goes to great lengths to ensure we have registered approved U.S. vendors that work closely with the Agricultural Marketing Service. On the other hand, smaller hog producers are kind of pissed because they've been left out in the many of them have been left out in the cold. Mm-hmm. And remember, the program that the Trump regime is using, that's a Depression-era FDR administration program. Otherwise, they would have had to come up with some other way to engage in their grift. Jesus. But this is, you know, this is what you get with Republicans, with people who, having gotten their front feet in the trough, worked tirelessly to get the back feet in as well. But in terms of thorns in the side for this Thursday, the 15th of November, 2018, you really can't beat Mike Lee of Utah, the senator. The Federalist Society invited him to deliver a speech to them today. And he delivered a real Lulu. Mike Lee has predicted, and kind of makes you wonder what his family tree looks like. Mike Lee has predicted, remember when Dave Nywert, in the conversation I had with him a couple of weeks back, said that they're absolutely fascinated, the White Wing is, with the concept of a civil war? Well, Lee proved it. Standing before the Federalist Society at the 2018 National Lawyers Convention, because Mike Lee has somehow gotten people to believe that he is a serious scholar of the Constitution, stood before the assembled group and said that there's a civil war coming. And the only way we can keep the Civil War from happening and violence from breaking out all over the country is to get rid of get the hockey puck, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get rid of the interstate highway system. The other thing we need to do in order to avert a civil war is to eliminate K through 12 public education. If we don't want a civil war, we're going to have to get rid of federal higher education accreditation. We'll be up to our eyeballs in slaughter if we don't shut down the Department of Commerce. It's going to be Antietam all over again if we can't, if we don't do away with early childhood education. The Republicans will be on the march if we don't eliminate housing policy and workforce regulation. And then, of course, well, we'll have another bull run or three if we don't get rid of what he called the huge glut of federally owned land. Let that sink in for a minute. No, really. The white wing is going to tear this country apart. Really. If we don't shut down the interstate highways. That right there will send the average person, even the teetotalers, some of them, scrambling to get their hands around the neck of a bottle of cheap tequila or Old Panther piss or maybe even the brown acid. It was hard to read that. The interstate highway system. For me, that means, let's see, I think I can name all the interstate highways in West Virginia. I-79, I-64, I-77, and I-68. Four-lane highways. Yeah, they got to go, or else the country's going to devolve into internecine bloodshed. Well, okay then. If this isn't for Titanic, for Thorn in the Side Thursday, I don't know. I don't know what it is. This is the same Mike Lee who, being a conservative, says that we've got to get rid of federal child labor laws because they're unconstitutional. You don't even have to get Mike Lee liquored up to get him to say that Social Security is unconstitutional. He doesn't have to sit there and honk on a vape of rhubarb parsnip bubblegum kush to get him to say that Medicare is unconstitutional. In other words, anything that benefits people who aren't Mike Lee in the United States of America is unconstitutional. And he described it in this weird-ass speech as a fundamentally un-American contest and will determine which half of our nation will have the power, at least temporarily, to unilaterally impose its will and its values on the other half. Many of the left don't seem too concerned. They think demographic and historic trends, coupled with what many see as the inherent rightness of their leftist cause, make their ultimate victory over red America inevitable. Hey, Mike, buddy, you're like me. You're so white you burn under a refrigerator bulb. I would not refer to anything as being red America. I know of some people who had that term applied to them. And they kind of laid claim to it. Mm. Yeah, this is this. I mean, in many instances, this is the kind of shit we fought a civil war over. And apparently, Mike Lee didn't like the outcome. Now, here's the fun part. All that crazy shit that he said, well, now. You know where you can find support for that crazy shit? And you can find it on the internet. You can find it in the Constitution of the Confederate States of America. In the Constitution of the CSA, the government was banned from appropriating or using any, quote, money for any internal improvement intended to facilitate commerce, except for the purpose of furnishing lights, beacons, and buoys, and other aids to navigation upon the coasts, and the improvement of harbors and the removing of obstructions in river navigation. Hoo-wee! That is some 200-proof crazy, that Mike Lee crazy. What would happen to the United States if public education K-12 was eliminated? Well, most people wouldn't be able to afford tuition to church schools now, would they? Isn't that sort of like holding a gun to the country and saying, "Do as I say, or the country gets it"? And yet, some people out in Utah, and certainly throughout the broader conservative movement, this guy qualifies as something other than a raving lunatic down at the end of the bar. If you've got the stomach for it, you can run over to Think Progress and listen to the entire address. It goes on for 52 minutes and 15 seconds, and I'll warn you. Whew. What are we going to do with the... What would Mike do? Mike Lee do with the interstate highway system? I mean, you plant them in daisies? And he said this shit at 9 a.m., which is kind of early for that sort of insanity. I usually can't get to places like that without at least a trip across the river. Oh, and by the way, Ron in Raleigh reminds me of something I wanted to make sure that I brought up this evening. You know, for the past several days, I've been referring to that skinhead who's sitting in the office of the Attorney General right now as Hot Tub Whitaker. Because, of course, he was involved as an enforcer with an outfit that was engaging in criminal business of trying to hoodoo people into hot tub schemes. Yes, hot tub schemes. With every new day comes a new manifestation of just what a real sort of catch him with a butterfly net Lulu this guy is. Vice with the report. Headline, Acting AG Matt Whitaker worked for a company that hawked time travel technology and other insane products. So I no longer refer to him simply as Hot Tub Whitaker. I refer to him now as Hot Tub Time Machine Whitaker. I'm pretty sure this sequel is not anywhere near as good as the original. Meanwhile, as to the Chinese ham purchases from Smithfield, Ron in Raleigh says, I wouldn't hit a hog in the ass with this deal. See what I did there? I do. And, of course, there's a lot of Smithfield operations down in North Carolina. Ron adds, did you hear that the acting AG was involved in a scam business that was pushing time travel in the near future and Bigfoot paraphernalia? And yes, I did. There are moments when sobriety seems not all it's cracked up to be. Like reading this at, what time did it? Noon. But it's true. Yeah. While Geezer discussed us, was tweeting furiously about the fact that Robert Mueller, who didn't need Senate confirmation, had never been confirmed by the Senate. The guy who is at least sitting in that office and requires Senate confirmation is, I guess, looking back on the days when he was hustling time travel. Hot Tub Time Machine, Matt Whitaker. It's never a good thing when a law enforcement officer was employed by a company that's under federal criminal investigation, much less the nation's chief law enforcement officer. Mm-hmm. Just reading directly from the article, Matthew G. Whitaker, the acting Attorney General of the United States, I challenged that term, spent over a year on the advisory board of an invention promotion scam firm that hawked Bigfoot paraphernalia. Wait for it. Masculine toilets. And underwear with sophisticated marketing pitches like, how are your balls feeling today? The company was called World Patent Marketing. This year, World Patent Marketing was shut right the hell down by a federal judge because the Federal Trade Commission said that World Patent Marketing had been running, quote, a scam that has bilked thousands of consumers out of millions of dollars, unquote, and remains under an FBI investigation. Renato Mariotti, a former prosecutor turned white-collar defense attorney, is the person who said that quote I noted above, it's never a good thing when a law enforcement officer is employed by a company that's under federal criminal investigation, much less the nation's chief law enforcement officer. But, of course, the Trump regime doesn't care. The Trump regime put Hot Tub Time Machine Whitaker where he is for one purpose and one purpose only. The only problem is, he still has to be careful because, Mueller or no Mueller, there is an obstruction of justice statute. And other attorneys general have in the past, hi, John Mitchell, are you still dead? Good. Gone down for that precise crime. Now, Hot Tub Time Machine Whitaker says he didn't do anything wrong when he was working for World Patent Marketing. Carrie Kupek is a Justice Department spokeswoman, and she said, Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker has said he's not aware of any fraudulent activities, any stories suggesting otherwise are false. On the other hand, he went to work for them after he was a U.S. attorney, and the company made public statements about his role in the company that were tied to his reputation as a U.S. attorney. Florida-based company. He joined him in late 2014. And on October 30th, 2014, World Patent Marketing sent out a press release, and the headline on the press release was, former U.S. Attorney Whitaker joins World Patent Marketing to protect inventors from patent marketing scam. When that's exactly what World Patent, you know, World Patent Marketing was running. I wish I was joking. And as time went on, they started putting his name on more and more press releases. Oh, and by the way, over on their Twitter account, they engaged in some racism. How about that? Who could have imagined World Patent Marketing? Then there was this. World-renowned physicist, author, and scholar Dr. Ronald Mallett believes time travel is possible, perhaps within the next decade. World Patent Marketing has partnered with Dr. Ronald Mallett to make his vision a reality. Then World Patent Marketing CEO Scott Cooper offered $1 million for proof of the existence of Sasquatch at the same time that he was hustling Bigfoot dolls. And yes, the phrase sort of grabbed the attention of Ron and Raleigh. I don't know about you, but I need one of those masculine toilets. I don't want my junk dangling in toilet water. Man, this water's cold. Deep, too. First cowbell of the evening. Well, here's how they described it in their press release. A toilet specially designed for well-endowed men. The distance between the rim and the water surface needs to be long enough to ensure there is no risk of contact. Dear God, this stuff's great. An invention that combines weed with fresh fruit, as the folks at Vice say, whatever that means. Disposable underwear. World Patent Marketing's Miller Industrial Jeans. Greenleaf Organic, an alternative to smokeless tobacco and chewing tobacco. And something, how are your balls feeling today? Well, how nice of you to ask. Don't ask again. Yeah. Oh, come on. you would. You'd laugh if, if it wasn't. And then, just a little bit ago, headline, in a self-defeating and self-incriminating slip-up, Trump just admitted he installed Matthew Whitaker, I'm sorry, that would be Hot Tub Time Machine Matthew Whitaker, to kill the Russia probe. Speaking to the Daily Caller, we talked about this interview yesterday. Trump called Whitaker somebody that's very
respected. As far as I'm concerned, this is an investigation that should have never been brought.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Whitaker is a very respected man. He's respected within DOJ. I heard he got a very good decision. I haven't seen it.
Okay. Let's see. Somebody that's very respected. Well, I guess so, by people who order mass masculine toilets and time travel technology. As far as I'm concerned, this is an investigation that should never have been brought. It should have never been had. It's an illegal investigation. And, you know, it's very interesting because when you talk about not Senate confirmed, Mueller is not Senate confirmed. So, yeah, he's kind of admitting that he put Whitaker in there to try to stymie the investigation. How about that? You couldn't make this stuff up. Note coming in from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Lee of County Mike. Was he on the short list for Supreme Court Justice? I think he was under consideration. But then when they found out that Brat Kavanaugh had declared that the president could not be bothered with something as trivial as being compelled to obey the law. Well, you know. Note coming in from Dave in Taliban, Indiana. This contribution's for homogenized milk, raw milk, my ass, Mike Lee. So that took us down to 440. And then something miraculous happened. Courtesy of Barkway. Cumulative donation for all the time I've listened but hadn't the means to donate. I got an inheritance recently. This was on the top of my to-do list. Dig this. We are now $40 away from coming even. That's humongous, and all we've got to deal with tomorrow is $200 or $240. That's so tremendous. Thank you, Barkway. Thank you so very, very much. And thanks to everybody who's kept the ball rolling this evening. Thank you. Robert in Australia, masculine toilets and time machines. We've had masculine toilets here in Oz since forever. It's called not filling them to the top. Oh, wait a minute. We've had masculine toilets here in Oz since forever. It's called not filling them to the top with water. What do you do when you've invented a time machine anyway? Travel back in time 10 years and give it to your earlier self so you don't have to invent it? Oh, my head's already hurting. I'm going to be thinking about that. I'll probably dream about it, Robert. Daggummit! Don't do that to me. Yeah, but what would you... You know, a long time ago, I do remember, and I think it was... It had to be some sort of satire or parody. I remember the article on Bart Cop diehard Bart Coppers. May remember this as well. The Time Travel Fund. Remember that? The idea being that you would put money in a time travel account now. And that, like, 500 years from now, when time travel became a reality, or was it time travel, or was it cryogenics or something? But anyway, you were going to be stinking filthy rich whenever in the future, because your money just laid around in the bank growing on interest. And then, lo and behold, a few years later, a similar concept shows up in Idiocracy. Remember how Frito was going to get paid because of the time travel money that, yeah. I know. Oh, so tomorrow is Barkway's birthday. She said, my donation is my present to the horn. Thank you. Thank you, Barkway. And a lovely, lovely gift it is. Thank you so very much. Because it gets the bills paid. Thank you. And happy birthday. Okay, what else? Because there's always more and more. This will come as a shock and a horror to hipsters everywhere. Down in Michoacan, in Mexico, there is a dispute brewing over avocado production. And exports are apparently at a halt. The avocado growers quit harvesting avocados last week. And shipments to the U.S., Canada, and Japan have been suspended. That according to a newspaper called Reforma. Now get this. Percentage of the total exported volume in kilograms, 77% to the United States, 7% to Canada, 6% to Japan, 3% to Europe, and then there's 6% to other. Somebody's getting the other 1%. Maybe they're eating them in Mexico. But here's the cause of the dispute. Now think about how much you pay for an avocado. Maybe if you're in California or Texas or Arizona or New Mexico, maybe you don't pay as much. But they run a buck and a half around here per avocado. Well, what the producers want, the farmers. They want a minimum price range of 84 to 99 cents per kilogram, 2.2 pounds of avocados. When a single avocado is going for a buck and a half. They're asking for 17 to 20 pesos, that equals 84 to 99 cents a kilo, as a minimum price range. On the other hand, the people with whom they have the dispute say, well, you can't set a price range. It just can't be done. They're saying that because in Michoacan, in Mexico, at present, the producers get about 10 to 12 pesos per kilo. They're not even seeking to double it. But that 10 to 12 pesos per kilo, according to the APEAM, which is the group that producers and packers are in, well, I say that's a good margin for producers. On about 2.05 million tons of avocados this year. Mm-hmm. Hey, I didn't know that some people are eating avocado pits roasted. That sounds kind of interesting. But as it is, Firehouse Subs is not getting avocados right now, or not getting much in the way of deliveries. Food Lion, not so much. Don't be surprised if avocados get a little scarce. I know, Ron and Raleigh, remember. but what about, whatever will they do, says Ron. Are tree beard and celery losing their shizzle? Oh, I'm afraid so. The horror. I love avocados, though. I really, really do. But in a world without avocado toast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you start wondering, hey, what happened to the avocados? Well, you know, it's those greedy Mexican farmers who want to actually, no, they're not greedy at all. $17 to $20 a kilo doesn't seem like a hell of a lot. At the high end, 99 cents a kilo, going to the people who actually grow the things. Yeah, I realize that's a total violation of Milton Friedman's idea of economics by terror, but still. Yeah. But I hung on to that for a little while just because I thought you might find it interesting. And just because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday and there's, you know, and the crazy you have always with you. So there's this guy named Bill Mitchell. And he's a maggot of monumental proportions. And he does some weird-ass right-wing maggot broadcast. And he thinks he knows why California is on fire. Again, this might piss Sparky off. Try not to get pissed off, Sparky. These people are assholes.
Nobody knows what started the Camp Fire. This is the biggest fire in California. Nobody knows what caused it, where it came from. So I said to myself, okay, there's a couple different things that could have caused this fire. An act of nature. Okay, it's possible. Lightning strike. Okay. A power line.
Wait. He's leaving out the laser beams from the sky. And the discrete particle energy weapons. You're gonna have to up your game, Billy boy.
Could have caused it. You could have had individuals being careless with a campfire. Could have started it, or you could have domestic terrorism that started it. Now,
domestic terrorism in California. Maybe we should think about that.
Who is the only domestic terrorist organization that we know of in America? Antifa.
What? Who's the only domestic terror organization that we know of in America? The Proud Boys? Identity Evropa? The National Socialist Movement? The Nazi Party? The Klan? No, you heard it.
Now, who is the only domestic terrorist organization that we know of in America? Antifa. Who loves to light things on fire? Antifa. So we have to ask our questions. Is it possible that Antifa is behind the California fires? And it is.
Oh, give me the swirly straw. Who likes to light things on fire? Who carries tiki torches through Charlottesville, Virginia? No, the answer, Bill, is not Antifa. It's your bunch. You fucking loony. But I thought we'd just try to have a little bit of a giggle, if we can call that a giggle, for the end of the program. Hey, thank you very kindly, Vincent. Now, for the first time in a long time, the only thing we have to deal with tomorrow is a plain old boring garden variety $200 fundraising goal. That's astonishing. Thank you, Vincent. Thank you, Barkway. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you to Ralphs. Thanks a ton to Will in Chicago. Thank you, Trevor. Thanks immensely for all that you all do to keep things going. Thank you to Michael and Madison. It is tremendous. So thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.